Welcome back to Community Connections, and we're going to change pace as we always do every half hour or hour on this show. And I'm going to talk to Sally now. Sally, we've actually interviewed Sally last year. This is a terrific project, and I know that coming up in the financial year, I know things are tough, but some people have a little bit of money extra that they'd like to donate and you can claim back. And also, I know we've got a few businesses listening. If you've got a little bit of money, this really has an impact. And I know, apart from interviewing Sally, I was at an organisation where she actually spoke, and everybody there saw just what a great project it is. So first of all, welcome, Sally.
Thanks, Alan. Lovely to be back.
Glad to have you back. Sally, now, for the people that didn't hear it last time, just could you give us a rough outline on what Backpack for Kids are? I know, but not everybody will have been listening last time.
Yeah, absolutely. So Backpacks for the Kids I founded 10 years ago to provide packs, crisis packs or welcome packs, to children who were entering the foster care system. It's a pack, a backpack or a baby care bag, a wheelie suitcase that has clothing, toiletries, something to cuddle, something to snuggle under, items to take their mind off what's going on as they're relocated, and things to help them see that somebody does care and to help them through recovery from probably trauma. That expanded very quickly just because of need and workers who I was talking to asking, please, can we give these to children entering any out-of-home care, so including kinship care with a relative or residential care, some other types. And then that expanded again to children who are displaced for any reason. So for some reason, they can't go back home, they can't access their belongings if they had some, or they can't return to the home where the biological parent is or has been. So that could be a house fire, it could be a teenager thrown out of their home, it could be a crime or something has happened in the home and they've had to be removed, could be due to addiction, abuse, a tragedy, disaster, could be economic stress where a family has lost their home, it could be due to abuse or abandonment. There are lots of reasons, but what we want to do, Backpacks for the Kids, is be there to give them some belongings, something to hold and feel a bit more secure, a bit more safe, help with the anxiety and the grief and the fear. And, just show them someone cares. But we do it in a way so that those belongings, those gifts that we give, are there with the children within 24 to 48 hours. They don't need to wait. The carers don't need to wait until the whole process of the assessments go on and then the application for any funding that might support the child or the carer, that can take weeks or months. So in the meantime, what I want to do is make sure they've got new undies and new socks and appropriate clothing, things to bring them comfort.
Sally, first of all, these backpacks are age-related, aren't they? So it's not a case of, a 10-year-old getting the same as or a 5-year-old getting the same as a 12-year-old. Like, you have them in not only age brackets, but obviously male and female as well, don't you?
Yeah, so the My Essentials packs, our Me packs, that's our core program. We pack those by the gender and clothing size because what's important is that the clothing and the undies fit.
Yep.
Everything else in the pack is geared around what we guess their age would be. So say they're a size 0 baby, they're probably 6 to 9 months old. So we make sure that anything else in there, the dummy, the bottle teat, the rattle or the toy, the things in there are appropriate for a 6 to 9 month old child. Same with a size 10. So a 10-year-old child could be size 8, size 10, size 14. We want to make sure that the things fit. So the workers are guided to look at the swing tag that's on every pack. Yep. Is it gender-oriented male or female clothing and all the other things that are in it, the stationery and other stuff? And then what size, what clothing size? So they don't need to know actually what age this child is. They may be outreach workers finding kids on the street. It could be, you know, they've just been found in a park or in an abandoned car or something, and all they need to do is guess what size clothing do we need to grab for this child, and that's the size of the pack that they grab. And they go from birth, size 4-0, right up to a youth size 18, and our other programs have adult clothing as well now. So our new program, the Youth Outreach Packs, our Yo Packs, have a bit less in them because they're meant for young people who don't have accommodation.
Yep.
And are being supported. And, you know, it's got one really good outfit, a top bottom and jumper or jacket, and then socks and underwear, really basic toiletries because, you know, we're here. A lot of these kids are using the public amenities to try to bathe. And we want to make sure they've got the toiletries to clean their teeth and feel clean. There's a bag of wipes in there and a notepad and pen. And then we make sure, this is by design with youth outreach workers, that these bags are not stuffed full like the B packs are because they're going to young people who, you know, don't have somewhere to put them. They need to carry them with them, and it leaves a bit of space for the other belongings that they might have.
Terrific. Now, one thing that we need to stress, and it's not the case with every one of them, but quite a lot of these children are taken out by the police or under court orders, aren't they? So the police go in, they get them, and they're out pretty quick. A lot of these situations, like the child doesn't get any chance to pack, do they? It's just a case of, well, they need to be got out. They could be in a dangerous situation. They're hauled out or taken out by the police and social workers. So they really only walk out with the what's on their backs in a lot of instances, don't they?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So when something is occurring, whether that's a crime or it's a planned removal of the children who've been, you know, there's something has a report has been made and substantiated, or it's been an ongoing arrangement with child protection working with a parent who, you know, might continue to fail and relapse or something else. So the children are removed usually during the night, and you can imagine in these houses it's not safe for workers to start putting their hands under the beds or into drawers. It's most safe for everybody involved if that's done very quickly, just in and out and find somewhere else to go. And, you know, we've spoken to adults who have been in the system and have had this experience, and, you know, they always say that it's frightening. They don't know what's going on. They might be in their pyjamas. Maybe they're taken by a stranger in the night and put in a car with nothing at all. Sometimes there might be a few things thrown into a garbage bag, but that's probably all. And the first place they may go could be the police station while they're waiting for a child protection worker, or it could be to a motel room with a child protection worker. Basically, until they can find somewhere safe, a safe home. It might be emergency foster care. They might find a relative. But that can take days, sometimes longer. And you can imagine you can't just take these kids shopping, especially when there's, you know, four or five siblings. And you can't just traipse off to Kmart and hope that they'll stay with you, because many of these kids, they just want to get home.
Yeah.
Whether it was good or bad, that's what they knew.
Well, that's all they knew. Sally, I've got to take a quick break, and then we've got a few more questions we want to talk to you about as well. So we'll just take this quick break and we'll be back with more. You're listening to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's about 18 minutes past one.
Doing everything that I believe in, going by the rules that I've been taught, no understanding of what's around me, and protected from the walls of love. Oh,
Sally, there's one thing I want to stress to people, and this is probably the worst case scenario. You said about the young people often have to go to the police station because they've been taken out either under court orders or they know a crime's been committed, somebody's reported to them and they've taken them away. So the young people are taken down to the police station. And if that case, particularly with young, well, we're not particularly with anyone, it involves a sexual nature. Not only do they only walk out with their clothes on, but pretty soon the police want those clothes for evidence, don't they? So apart from not having anything other than what they had their clothes when they walked out the door, all of a sudden they haven't even got those.
Of course, it's hard for me to talk about that. But yes, when I had a tour of the Southeastern Centre Against Sexual Assault, there are centres around the state.
Yep.
And that was highlighted, that they will come in for assessment and part of, you know, if there is a suspected crime, sometimes it's blood other nature crime, but that clothing needs to be taken and they'll be sitting in a disposable hospital gown until someone comes to pick them up, and that's how they leave, and I just couldn't bear it. They had some tracksuits there and underwear for women, for adult women, but nothing for the kids who might be with them.
Didn't they? It was only just for the parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'll get off that. I can hear it in your voice that it's... Mm. But I only wanted to say that because I just want people to understand that how dire some of these poor young people are, that not only you think, well, it's bad enough going out with you just in your pyjamas or whatever you're wearing, but it can get worse than that. And the police have got to do it. They need the evidence.
That's right. Absolutely. Right. I understand that. I don't want to have kids sitting there in that situation.
I can understand that too. All right. So let's just tell the listeners, I've got a fair idea because I did hear you speak, and apart from interviewing you, I think, last year, and would like to talk to you again sort of either late this year or early next year again. Sally, what happens when they're taken? Well, say they've been taken to the police station, or it doesn't have to be the police, I guess, but they've gone out. Now, they've got nothing. The process is it some of the stuff in the police station, or you tell the police, tell the people where these backpacks are, for not for the public to access, but for the workers?
Some police stations have had a few. The difficulty at police stations is they don't have a storeroom for these type of resources. So it would usually be the child protection workers who have large numbers. Some officers around the state have very high numbers of our packs, and they've got four or five of each size and gender, so that they've got it to grab as soon as they're aware of the children or they're actually going to be with the children. And police, of course, have access any time to our tiny sites, the 24-hour access points, along with other first responders and paramedics, anyone who might have that first contact with children who, you know, need clothing and underwear stuff.
Yep. pardon me. So the police can get 24... Well, when I say police, I'm talking about the workers as well. They can get 24 hours a day access to these containers, can't they?
They can, unfortunately. I'm very sorry to say that the tiny sites, those 24-hour access points, is currently under review because our fundraising has been just so hard. The donations this year compared to last year are at about 50%.
Is that all?
So half of what we were trying to raise this year, and the requests for our packs is up by 37%. And on top of that, the donated items, which we heavily rely on, is only up 6%. So the amount of goods that are being donated to us is not enough to meet the requests, and the money that we're raising is not enough to continue what we're doing. We've got to, you know, act like any business and try to remain sustainable, and that's meant cutting our staff hours by about 36% in the last couple of months. So we've really dramatically reduced that, even more heavily relying on volunteers. who, you know, are the lifeblood of this country.
Yep.
And yes, as you mentioned, we do have our annual Giving Day campaign running at the moment during June, and we're hoping to raise $85,000 for the annual Giving Day, which is about 10% of what we need to run next year, which is from the 1st of July. But we're only at about $36,000. So it's not looking good.
I would urge people to get paper and pencil at about 5 to 2. Sally will give you the way that you can donate. It's a terrific program. It certainly deserves to be. I think it should be most of it funded by the government, but I'm not going to go there because that's, you know, my views on government. Mm-hmm. of waste is terrible. And it is coming up at the end of the year, and I know that I'll no doubt, and I don't know for sure, but I'll bet any donation will be tax deductible, and the same with if we've got any corporations or any businesses listening, it'd be the same. It'd be tax deductible, wouldn't it, Sally?
Absolutely. We do have deductible gift recipient status, and even goods, some companies who have an ABN can donate, you know, volumes of goods that are maybe end of line, they might be manufacturers of children's clothing or backpacks, even sports bags, anything, any of the typical items that we would include in any of our packs across the four programs, including our Santa packs. We would love to hear from any business who might be able to help us and help themselves by being able to write off those donations.
All right. Sally will definitely give you those as we get closer to the 2 o'clock news. Sally, I've got to ask you, what got Sally involved? Like, this organisation didn't exist before, did it? You started. So what was the point where you said, I think we need to do something about this and I'm going to be the one who does it?
So I had a little bit of money to donate, and I think, like most people, I wanted to make sure that it was going to be put to good use. So I rang 3 organisations, and Backpacks for Aussie Kids was one of them. They're no longer running, but at the time they'd been going for 8 years. And she explained how hard it is to raise the money to cover things like your telephone, your IT, internet, your we pay rent. She was doing it from a shipping container at home. You know, just all the typical expenses that you would have. And I said, okay. And she said, look, well, for example, I'm packing an order for it was Health and Human Services then, now Families, Fairness and Housing, in Melbourne, and I'll need to pay for freight for these packs. And I said, what? Why would Melbourne, Victoria, be asking for resources like this from far north Queensland? It just was crazy to me. And I was going through relocation myself, but just because I had divorced and was relocating and changing jobs, and I just thought that I'd have a bit of time on my hands to do, I thought, 5 or 6 of these backpacks, you know, a month just for the local kids entering. But when I asked around, I made inquiries, and did some pretty intense research for 2 weeks.
Yep.
And there was nothing. And every single person I spoke to said, please, please do this. This is desperately needed. It would make such a big difference. And let us know when you're doing it. And, you know, I thought 5 or 6 a month. But in the first year of delivery, which was April to December 2015, we delivered 732 of the packs. So it was very clear from the very beginning that this is desperately needed. You know, we give to much more now than children entering out of home care, but just in Victoria, there's 12 kids every single day, babies, children, youth, entering out of home care just in Victoria. So 12 a day.
And I interview Anchor from time to time, and I had them on the other day, and they say it's going to get worse. Like, we haven't time I interview them, I'd like to think they're going to say to me, look, Alan, we're at the top and the numbers are coming down. But they tell me over the next few years it's not going to get any better.
I think all of us are feeling it. Any community service organisation, any charity at the moment is definitely experiencing that amongst the networks that I speak to. And, you know, requests are rising. For us, it's 37%. For other organisations, especially food relief, it's been higher, way higher than that in increase. And, you know, we're all feeling it difficult to raise money as well. And we understand, we're humans too, living in this economic climate. So we get it. It's just very frustrating that, you know, the current world requires innovation and solutions to rising need, rising cost. Yep. And, you know, donors play a critical role in that.
I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. So please have your paper and pencil ready towards the 2 o'clock news, and Sally will give you some contact details. Thanks. Talking to Sally from Backpack for Kids, which is a terrific program. It's all about young people who are taken out of their homes or have had to leave home. And look, I know, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago when I was doing one of the interviews, there seems to be a bit of a conception out there with some people, these kids just leave home for no reason at all, just because mum tells them to clean up and they don't want to do it. But that's not true. You might get the odd one or two that does that, but I'd say over 90% of these young people that are taken out of home or leave home, it's not because they don't want to be home, because most young people would love to be at home, but generally those young people are taken out for their own good, or they're in such a diabolical situation at home they want to be at. So please, when we talk about these people that are homeless, please bear that in mind. They're not just rebellious kids who say, well, stick it, I don't want your rules. Is that a fair assumption, Sally?
Well, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, I can only go on, you know, what happens in my own world and what I hear. But I know now with these issues just rising so dramatically that there's a lot in place at schools. So if the young people are attending school, there will be teachers and welfare workers who are aware of what's happening for that young person and trying to provide as much support as possible, but I would have to agree with you that it's when, for teenagers, it's when the situation at home just becomes so unbearable or unsafe that they might choose to leave, and hopefully that is temporary. Hopefully they have a friend or neighbour who can support them with a couch to sleep on and be safe, but unfortunately, what I'm hearing from outreach workers right now is that youth homelessness is skyrocketing. It's not just rising; it's spiking straight up.
Yeah. As I said, I spoke to someone the other week, and they were each time I talk to them, I just hope they'll tell me that we've hit the top, but they certainly that isn't going to. Sally, just to give people a concept of when you set up a container, what, apart from the cost of the container and that, what, how much is, would it take to, in a rough estimation, to deck out, not so much, I'm not talking about building shelves, I'm talking about actual pack racks, packs themselves.
Well, each container has a minimum stock of at least two of each size and gender of the me packs and a stock of the youth outreach packs as well. And then we also have new car restraints, porta cots with linen packs and strollers just to help keep sibling groups together, because a carer, foster care, emergency care might want to take a sibling group but not have a car restraint that's suitable for the youngest. So there are some of those items as well, and about $12,000 fills that container with goods that are ready and available.
Be lovely if we had someone available that wanted to donate the $12,000 to do a container for you, wouldn't it?
Or a site. We've actually had what's been most frustrating with this initiative over the 5, 6, 7 years that it's been running is finding the sites suitable, safe to reach, and reasonably secure sites to put the containers on, so that workers, first responders, emergency services can actually go there and access them.
Well, let's put the call out. You've got the Yarra Valley up here. There is heaps of vineyards there, and there's plenty of sites. Like they use a lot of the site, but there's a lot of valuable site which could take a container, and most of them would be accessible 24 hours a day. So, look, if you know somebody that owns a vineyard, put it to them. It'd be a terrific if Sally could put it one up this way, I'm sure. But also, if somebody, if a few people or a group could get together and raise the $12,000 and find a site, man, I guarantee Sally'd be really happy with that.
Absolutely. And we don't have anything up that way. And I believe there's a pretty high need, because the statewide after-hours service team is near there.
Yep.
And we'd love to have something available to them that's quick and easy for them to call in, grab the packs and get them to the children immediately.
There's a call out. I mean, there is plenty of all people that are on big blocks of land, and they're not going to come in and annoy you in the house there. And it's not going to be Joe Blow that's going to be knocking on your door or anything like that. It's going to be either the police or a social worker, and they will. So you're not going to have any problems with prowlers. So, look, if you've got some space, ring up Sally, and Sally will give you the contact details shortly and offer a site. And then it'd be great if a group could rally around and raise some money. Sally, I've got to take a quick break, and I'll be back with. Oh, no, hang on, I'm not. Sorry. I've got to wait another minute. There's a couple of things popped up on the computer, but I've got to wait for one more thing and we'll be right. Sally, it obviously, if you could, you'd love to have enough money to sort of be able to cover all these young people, wouldn't you?
Yes. We would like to have enough money to not only have, you know, cleared to be in the black again this year, but to build our capacity and grow. And if I could put these tiny sites all over Australia, that would be amazing, because we can actually offer the space that's inside those containers to the organisations who are in those areas and are local to the containers. So not just our packs and our resources, But other organisations who provide other types of material aid could also. I mean, we've had one organisation talk about having a small fridge that's solar-powered with cheese, I think they're cheese sandwiches, cheese sandwiches, so that, you know, paramedics or anyone can access those when it's urgent. If the police know that there are, you know, they're about to go to a place where there's known to be homeless, you know, they can go and get those and hand them out. So, you know, it's just such a versatile, amazing initiative that could provide so much. It's,
yeah, and the other issue too is that we haven't probably stressed enough is that these are in pretty dire situations. Like, they're in a hurry. Like, it's not a case of, oh, we wait till 9 o'clock tomorrow to be able to get something. I mean, particularly in the case of where the person has to surrender their clothes now. Like, this is pretty quick stuff, isn't it? It could be 2 in the morning. It could be any old time.
I guess some people would say, you know, you can wait until 9 a.m. when the shop's open to buy a pair of undies. But why wait? Why make a person wait in that kind of circumstance? You know, where's the dignity and the self-worth in that? And we've heard too that when a young person's given a youth outreach pack that has a decent set of clothing in it and they can feel clean with the toiletries, they're much more likely to go to where the food truck is or to where there's a free meal or to, you know, to walk into the job service agency. They won't do it in the state that they might have been in, but now they've got new clothes, they feel better, and they're on their pathway.
Sally, I've got to take a quick break now and we'll be back with more. When it's late on Friday night and you are feeling pretty fly, rush off your dancing shoes and glide, the time is right. Cause you are swaying in the sky, yeah, you are shining in the spotlight. The buzz is running pretty high, you're crazy for the night. Sally, you were talking a minute ago about their self-pride and self-worth, that once they, you know, start to get dressed a bit better and that. I mean, one of the things that we should be very careful of is that we don't deny a young person their future, because, you know, if they haven't got decent clothes and that, they can drop out of school, and then that not only affects their future then, or affects them then, but it can affect their future income and all sorts of things, can't they? We've got to break this nexus between homelessness and then just going off the rails.
Oh, absolutely. I actually just had a teacher talking about this recently with me, and she said they can tell, they can see what's happening with a student who doesn't have the resources that the other students have. They have trouble staying engaged and concentrating and completing work because they're already trying to think of how they're going to cover up the fact that they don't have an exercise book, that they don't have colouring pencils, that they, you know, they can't complete a task because they simply don't have pens at home. So it goes to such basic essentials that most of us take for granted or can very easily supply to yeah. our young people. But there's a lot who don't have those. And I was shocked when I started doing foster care training. I assumed that the kids would turn up with the stuff that I would pack for my kids and send them off to someone's house with. But that is just not the case at all.
And you hit on a subject right, because I do listen to you, right back at the start of the interview. Like, you were saying that some of these young people don't even have toothbrushes and that. Like, they just... And they're, I mean, we're not a third world country. I mean, this is... Every child deserves to have those sorts of items available to them, don't they?
Oh, I agree with you 100%. That's, you know, that's my driver, is that these kids just need to have some stuff, their own stuff, and not be scared about what they can touch or use in their... wherever they're being taken, to be safe. It seems like such basic stuff.
Oh, it is.
You just don't think.
It's basic to us as human beings, but we don't realise there are people out there that don't have that. And I mean, I'll tell the story once that, and this is an older person, I had a suit coat on this day and it had my wallet in it and I was going off to work and when I went outside it was colder than what I thought. So I changed my coat and away I went, and of course it's pretty obvious. I get down an hour or two later and I want to buy a coffee and I've got no money. You've got no idea how that feels, and mine was only money, and to know that you're walking around, and I knew that night I'd have my money back and all the sort of stuff. But you've got no idea how I felt that day with just, there was nothing I could do.
You raise another really good point, is that they don't have money. They don't have access to money like adults and people with some money do. And I'm speaking very generally, so please don't feel that I'm labelling everyone in these circumstances. There are children who go to foster carers who are amazingly generous and supply well more than their needs. So, you know, we're not talking about every child. But, oh, my gosh, I lost my track.
Well, we're talking about money and not having any.
Oh, yes, sorry. One of the girls said who received a youth outreach pack, she approached us when we had a stand at the Melbourne Royal Show, and she came and said the clothing made her feel safe and the toiletries that were in her youth outreach pack actually helped her avoid stealing deodorant. She said, I had gone as long as I could. I felt like I had no other choice. And when this was handed to me, I was so relieved because I really didn't want to have to steal it.
Gee, I mean, that'd be a tragic case, wouldn't it? To see that someone got that low in themselves and they still wanted to present themselves, that they felt that they'd have to go off and steal to cover that.
Yeah, I can't imagine how it would feel like you're being forced to go against your values and your own morals and to be clean enough to be in someone else's presence and just feel, you know, a bit better about yourself.
And I guess, without going too far into this, I guess the first time, if she'd have done it, wouldn't have been the last time. If she'd have been forced into doing that, then that could become a life of crime quite easily, and not as though she's stealing for profit. She's just stealing to be in a situation that we would expect every young person to be in.
Yeah. You know, I wish we had another hour to talk about all the benefits of these resources when they seem so basic, but, you know, they literally do change the cycles. They, you know, reduce the returning to incarceration patterns. They change a child's life trajectory because for a moment they realise somebody does care. Mm. And, you know, it's just...
I guess that's one of the problems too, that some of these children come out of homes where, and I'm not going to have a go at parents, but some of them are drug addicts and things like that. That's why some of these children are forced out of home. If you don't break the cycle, then we all learn, and I spoke to somebody about a couple of weeks ago, and I don't want to tell all about my experiences. This interview's not about it. But my parents influenced the person I was, and they were really decent people. But if you're living in a house and where mum and dad steal and do drugs, then it's not going to go well for you for your future, because they're the people that you're looking up to, and they're not the people that young person should be looking up to.
And I would have to add gambling to that too. Kind of addiction. Yep. Tends to change behaviours and certainly impact on our ability to care for each other.
Yeah, it's not good. And again, we should point out we are not a third world country. It's a country of plenty, and therefore nobody should be going without. But if they are, and I believe, and I said this earlier in the interview, I believe that the government should be funding you, whether it be federal or state. But if they're not, I mean, we need to make sure that this program continues to exist, but not only exist in its form, we need to see it in a bigger form, so that as these numbers escalate, you're not having to try and pick winners and losers, so to speak, that some can get them and some can't. Every child that comes out or goes into care should have the ability to get one of these backpacks.
I would love to have funding, and a funding that's a few years running just to feel a bit secure. You know, I've been running in survival mode for 10 years. I'm burnt out. I don't know how much longer I can keep people engaged, staff engaged, keep everything running in the hope that we're going to raise enough next week to do what we're doing this week.
Well, you people need to stay engaged, and you people need to keep yourselves up, because otherwise the young people who really are desperate for your help, you're not going to be able to help, are you?
Yes, well, you know what? I'm just one of those people who responds to need. So as long as I feel like it's useful and I can see that it's making a difference, I will keep pushing and keep going.
Well, I certainly think it is. I mean, that's why we're talking to you. I think it's a great project, and as I said, I would love to see it government funded, but that's my views of government. But having said that, look, let's make an appeal. We would like, first of all, it would be terrific if somebody, and there's plenty of space out here in the Yarra Valley, who would donate the site. It's not that hard. They're not going to be knocking on your door. They'll just come in, they'll get what they need, and they'll be gone. You're not going to have people that you don't, well, you might not know them, but they're all going to be emergency workers. So you're not going to have just people belting on your door. And also, it would be great if we could get enough sponsorship for some people to actually get a container for them. Do you have to pay for the container as well, Sally?
Each of our sites that have been built and activated have all kind of been projects that have run a bit differently. Yep. But yes, somebody needs to purchase usually a second-hand shipping container. Then there's a project to do the works inside and around it. They look amazing. They're painted beautifully. They've got our logo on them. We've never had one graffitied. We've never had any dumping of goods.
Oh, good.
And then we stock them, and the only people who would approach that would be our volunteers to stock it or move stock around, or organisations who we have researched and we've provided the PIN code to. So nobody else would be going there, and it doesn't happen very frequently. These containers are not about volume. They're about being there in that moment when there's nothing else available.
When they don't need... Well, they're a backup plan, aren't they, so that these young people aren't left... Sally, how are people going to donate to you? Because I'm really hopefully we can get you some money. And there may be a service group club out there that sees this as a great project. I know that there's at least two listening this afternoon that, hey, you can raise some money. Why not? it doesn't have to be your club. You can get three or four clubs together. So how are they going to donate, Sally?
Well, it's very easy. We make it as easy as possible for you to give us your money. So you just, we have got the annual Giving Day campaign running. It's on My Cause. So if you went to mycause.com.au and search for B4VK, that's our Backpacks for Vic Kids, number four, annual Giving Day, you should find us. But you can also go to our website. It's www.backpacksforvic, for Victoria, kids.org.au, and the four is a number four. And then across the top, you'll see our phone numbers, our email address, our address in Cranbourne West, and the donate button. And you can also shop. So you can sponsor a pack. Sponsoring a My Essentials pack, for example, gives a child over $500 worth. And it costs us about $125 to deliver. So terrific. We quadruple your dollars.
And also, if, as you mentioned during the interview, if anybody out there has got an abundance of things that could go into these backpacks and maybe they're a bit outdated, you're no longer selling them, this would be a great spot to give them to. You keep them out of landfill and you know they're going to go to a really good cause, don't they?
Yeah, there's a big list of the items that we can use and items we can't use under How to Help on our website, donate items, and you'll see the list.
Sally, I've got to go, but first of all, just quickly, your website again, please.
Backpacks, number four, Vic, for Victoria, kids.org.au.
And the other one, My Cause, what was that?
MyCause.com.au. There's the annual Giving Day campaign to hopefully hit our 10% of what we need for next year's target and to help us avoid reducing.
Let's give it a really good whack. Been great talking to you, Sally, and I hope next year or later in the year when I talk to you, you tell me, hey, the pressure's off.
Oh, I hope so too. Thank you for having me, Alan. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, Sally. Bye.